طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح، طفلة تمتطي.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's continuing occupation and colonization of their homeland. The main purpose of This Week in Palestine is to feature the Palestinian narrative, the Palestinian voice that is too often missing in the presentation of news and analysis in the mainstream media. This Week in Palestine was created by Sharif Pham, and we continue it in his memory. This is John Roberts. What a difference a week makes. We began last week's program slamming President Obama for doing nothing about the Standing Rock pipeline issue. The criticism was made on the program last Sunday morning, and that very afternoon, the news was released that the Army Corps of Engineers was denying any permits to continue to build the pipeline under the Wahe River and through the Standing Rock sacred grounds. Great news. But what it really means for the future, given a Trump presidency, is difficult to predict. The company building the pipeline claims that it will continue with the project despite not having the proper permits, and Trump is offering support for the completion of the pipeline. Obama is on the way out, so who knows what will happen. But for the moment, a victory for the beleaguered Native Americans at Standing Rock. Now the question is, will Obama pardon Leonard Peltier in the waning days of his presidency? President Clinton was set to pardon him as he was about to leave the White House, but the FBI backed him down. Hopefully, President Obama will do the right thing. It's junket time in Massachusetts. So writes Nancy Murray in Mondo Weiss. She continues, "The time of year when Massachusetts legislators enjoy an all-expense-paid trip to Israel is again upon us. Once again, a lobbying group, the Jewish Community Relations Council, JCRC, is planning the itinerary. According to JCRC Executive Director Jeremy Burton, over the past 5 years, he has personally accompanied almost a third of the entire Massachusetts legislature on trips to Israel and has been able to, quote, watch firsthand as our participants fall in love with the leaders and activists who've inspired and energized me for years," unquote. Soon after they return, the 12 state legislators participating in the current JCRC junket may vote on an anti-BDS legislation that JCRC has said it intends to introduce in the new legislative season beginning in January. The stakes this time are particularly high, given the fact that two previous efforts to enlist the Massachusetts legislature in the anti-BDS brigade were derailed by spirited activism spearheaded by the Alliance for Water Justice in Palestine, JVP Boston, and Massachusetts Peace Action, first in March of this year and then again in July. This legislative trip may seem like an obvious conflict of interest, but the State Ethics Commission does not see it that way. It rejected the ethics complaint filed by the Massachusetts Peace Action after JCRC took a quarter of the state Senate to Israel last year following a Senate vote on a pro-Israel resolution. It is not clear if the touring legislators will cross paths with the Massachusetts governor, Charles Baker, who leaves for Israel on December 9th on his first international trade mission. He will be accompanied by scores of government officials and private sector businessmen on a journey reportedly subsidized by the New England Israel Business Council with the support of Combined Jewish Philanthropies. Last month, Combined Jewish Philanthropies paid $25,000 for 5 Baker aides to visit Israel to prepare for the governor's trip. Governor Baker has already paid his anti-BDS dues. He is a signatory of the American Jewish Committee's sponsor's governor's letter that characterizes BDS as a virulent movement seeking to demonize Israel. And will the Massachusetts governor and legislators bump into the Boston police commissioner and law enforcement agents who are on yet another junket, this one sponsored by the Anti-Defamation League, ADL? The ADL, which in 1993 was revealed to have been conducting a massive spying operation on Arab Americans and other supporters of Palestinian rights and activists opposing South African apartheid, now offers annual trips to Israel for law enforcement to hone their counterterrorism skills. The last thing Boston needs is training in Israel-style racial profiling and surveillance, and in the violent suppression of nonviolent popular resistance, such as that taking place on a weekly basis in the West Bank village of Bilayin. And the last thing Massachusetts needs is the Israeli right or wrong mentality and casual corruption that these junkets promote. That was an article written by Nancy Murray in Mondo Weiss. Our conversation with Iyad Bernat is our feature presentation this morning. Iyad heads the popular committee in Bialin, in the West Bank of Palestine. The village referred to by Nancy Murray just a minute ago in her article, a village known for its tenacious resistance to occupation and in particular resistance to the building of the apartheid wall that has dissected the village's lands. Here is our conversation. Well, Iyad, thank you for speaking with us on This Week in Palestine. We try as much as possible to feature the Palestinian voice, the Palestinian narrative. And so we're grateful to you for agreeing to tell your story for those who are listening, because we consider you a really genuine voice for the Palestinian people. So welcome and thank you.
Thank you.
You're in the United States on a book tour. You'll be here in the Boston area and then I guess going out throughout the country. You've written a book called Bilayin and the Nonviolent Resistance. It is a story of your village and the courageous resistance you have carried on and continue to wage in the face of a brutal military occupation. So, please tell us about Bilayin. Tell us about your village, its people, the occupation, and what's happened and what's happening now.
I live in Bilayin village from long time. All my life is in Bilayin. My father, my grandfather, all our life in Bilayin. Bilayin is under the occupation since 1967. It's a small village, 2,000 people live in Bilayin. The land of the village is about 4,000 dunams. They confiscated 60% from the land of the village to build a new apartheid wall and a settlement there, colony there. It's called Mektiaho East. Mm-hmm. So the story of our village, that's, as I said, we under the occupation and we refuse the occupation. We fighting for our freedom, like everybody in the world, to have justice, equality, peace, fighting for a better future for our children. So the occupation is continue until now. to confiscate the land of the village, to destroy the olive trees of the farmers. That's most of the people is the farmers in the village, and they used to have the olive trees as the economy of the village. So most of the people was selling olive oil. Now many of them, they have to buy it because of all these settlements and wall and all these confiscated of the land that's happened there in Belayin. Belayin is 16 kilometers west of Ramallah city, in West Bank. Like other villages around the world, the occupation confiscated about 10% from the 22% that's left for the Palestinians as after 1967 border. And also this 12% is now full of colonies inside of West Bank. And if you talk about the settlers who's moved to West Bank, it's about 700,000 settlers.
Now, how far is Belayin from what we call the Green Line, the international?
It's not, the Green Line is the 1967 border.
Yeah.
It's about 7 kilometers.
Seven.
And these 7 kilometers between the wall and the Green Line is now full of settlements.
Right.
And these settlements, they built it after Oslo Agreement. You talk about 1993. And the biggest one now in where is Belayin, and it's a new one in Mudain Alid. Is in 10 years we have 60,000 people moved to these settlements. Most of them, they came from New York, the Orthodox Jewish settlers. So this comes very fast, especially in this time that's all the world support the occupation, especially the United States government that support them, and they make the aid this year to up to $3.8 billion a year. It's about 11 or 12 million a day that they send to the occupation, to the army, to build more settlements, to occupy Palestine. So this is coming worse for the Palestinians, especially for the farmers, that they lost their land, they lost their jobs. And this is the idea of the Zionists from the beginning, to clean the land from the people. And by this way, is making the life hard for the Palestinians, difficult farmers, to give him move from their land, from their villages.
Yeah. So let me just go back a little bit. Israel says it builds the wall for security. But if it was building the wall for security, it would be, it would build the wall on the international Green Line. It's building the wall inside the Green Line. It's building the wall to basically protect settlements. The settlements, the settlers are coming over onto Palestinian land, continuing to take Palestinian land. And Israel is building a wall to protect that land which they have taken, and it separates Palestinians from their agricultural land, so that the wall really is a way to steal land. I mean, there's no other way to look at it. It's a way to take land that's not theirs and build a wall to keep the people out of land that's technically theirs. Is that a way to...
To be more clear in this point, what the United Nations mentioned, that they give 22% from the Palestinian historic land to the Palestinians to build a Palestinian state.
Right, in the West Bank.
In West Bank. So what's they doing by building the wall? They confiscated 10% from the 22%. So what's left now is 12%. And this 12% of the Palestinian historic land is full of settlements.
Right.
Also, so the wall came to confiscate more land, to build more settlements, and the to confiscate the water of the Palestinians.
Right.
We have a rich water in the Palestinian side in West Bank, in west of West Bank. So where's the wall came, and it looks like when you see the wall on the map, it comes like snake. to take more right. land. In Bilayin, it's 7 kilometers from the green line, but in other cities and other places, it's become like 20 kilometers
right.
inside. So this is where the water, the big aquifer of the water came. They're stealing the water also. They give it to the settlements, and they sell it a little bit back from this water to Palestinians.
Right, at four times the
yeah.
the rate they sell it to Israelis, I'm told.
Yeah, this Makarot company.
Yeah.
So this the goal of the war. So as we said, if it's for security and we are against the walls, we didn't want walls. If we're talking about peace, why the walls? And what's about the settlements inside, the settlers inside of West Bank? If it's for security, what's
yeah,
about
right.
them? Why they didn't want security for them? So this, just for a propaganda, that's to make the wall and to say about wall that it's for security. It's not a for security. If you go to the ground, you can see the wall is just to take more land, to make the life hard for the Palestinians to live there and to move by themselves from this land. So people follow the news here, and we know the media is didn't show the life of the Palestinians on the ground. They didn't show the occupation. And we believe that this media is controlled
yeah.
by these companies, by all these Zionist lobby that is control the media here, and they didn't show anything in the ground. But anybody who's coming to Palestine and he said he see by his own eyes what's going on, he's become our messenger.
Yeah.
He's believed that this is apartheid. When Tosman Tutu came to Bilayin, he said it's worse than the apartheid in South Africa. When Jimmy Carter came, he said it's apartheid country, it's apartheid wall, illegal settlement. So these people, and we have many famous people that came and they saw from the ground what's happened there. So Palestinians now, if you go to Palestine now, to West Bank, you cannot move from city to city, from village to village, because of this wall and because of these settlements inside of West Bank, because of the borders, the checkpoints, that's everywhere. So you cannot move from place to place. You cannot go to Jerusalem as a Palestinian because of these checkpoints, and you need a permission and these things. So it's very hard life, and they mean to make it very hard for the Palestinians now to try to kick out how many Palestinians they can to build what they called it a Jewish state.
Okay, now tell us about the resistance. You heard that they were going to build a wall. You knew the settlements were there. Some of the settlements were there already. They're going to be building new settlements, and now they tell you they're going to build a wall. And tell us about the response of the village.
Yes, resistance in Bilayin started when the people saw the bulldozers destroyed the olive trees.
Hmm.
Olive trees is the life of the farmers.
Right.
And they refused that. We started our resistance in December 2004, and we used the nonviolent way in our struggle. We fight by our bodies. We put ourselves in cages and barrels. We tie ourselves to the olive trees. And from that time, it's more than 12 years now, every week we have a demonstration. And every week we have internationally from all of the world join us in these demonstrations. We have an Israeli activist also that join us in these demonstrations. As I said, we use a nonviolent way. We use many ideas in our demonstration, weekly demonstration, to get the message out to many people in the world. That's to show the life of the Palestinians, to show what's going on in Palestine, to show what's the Israelis doing now there. They never follow any agreement. They never agree with any international law, doing lots of things against human rights. So this was to show the people and to get more people understand what's happened in Palestine and what's going on. So in other side, they use a lot of violence against us, to break this non-violent way. They didn't want this way to be grown in other places in Palestine. They didn't want the people outside to know about what's happened there, the life of the Palestinians. So they use lots of violence against us in Bel'in village and in other villages that we succeed to grow it in many places in Palestine, about 15 to 20 places now that's doing the weekly demonstration by non-violent way with international and Israeli activists around West Bank. So this was from the beginning. They started the violence against us. They killed two of our friends in this demonstration, Basim Abu Rahman, 17 of April 2009. That's, they shot him by tear gas canister made in the United States. It made a big hole in his chest and he's died in that place. 1st of January 2011, they killed his sister, Jawahar Abu Rahman. So this way of violence that they use it, it was... they always using a violence against the Palestinians everywhere in Gaza, in West Bank, in all the demonstration. But they mean in this way to break the people by the violence because they didn't want to this message to get outside. And they know exactly that the way of nonviolent resistance is show the face of the violence. So they didn't want it to be grown or continue. They use many kinds of weapons against us in this demonstration, and most of these weapons comes from United States. It's illegal to use it against civilians, and they use it against people.
So they're shooting tear gas canisters, but the canisters are acting like bullets. They're hitting people and killing people, and it's just not canisters of gas. It becomes a lethal weapon.
Yeah, it's illegal to use it by the international laws against civilians, and they use it in Bel'in, and I said many, many kinds of these weapons that they use it, and we have more than 40 people being killed by these tear gas canisters and rubber coat steel bullet that's they use it against the people in these nonviolent demonstrations. More than 40 people being killed in nonviolent demonstrations. It means that's not a tear gas or rubber bullet. It's a weapon that's going to kill people.
And we're seeing that now in Standing Rock. We're seeing the use of that kind of weaponry at Standing Rock in North Dakota. A young woman had her arm just about torn off by one of these canisters. And it's been interesting to see how Palestinians and the Native Americans at Standing Rock have found commonality in the kind of struggle that's going on.
Yes, in Standing Rock, we send our support. We send a message to the people there because we support everybody in the world. He's asking for justice and peace. When they try to take the water of the people or to the land of the farmers there. So we send a message from Bel'in, from Palestine, to these people in Standing Rock. We're standing with all resistance that's fighting for justice. Like Black Lives Matter, we support them. We support the Standing Rock. We support all the resistance, the revolution that's against dictators, against governments that try to push people and to control people by injustice way. So, yes, this is what they use in North Dakota against the Standing Rock. And this police been teaching by the Israeli police also. The Israeli police, they train them how to use this violence against these people. So it's the same struggle for justice. It's the same way how they use a violence against these people.
Mm-hmm. Israel's developed an entire industry around surveillance, means of control, military means of control and occupation, etc. that they're selling to the world. A lot of it is manufactured in the United States, but they're quite open in saying, well, these are tested. We've tested this on the Palestinian people. We know about occupation and sell it at Standing Rock or wherever, all throughout the world in terms of means to control populations. And so we see Palestinian people as the, call them sort of the guinea pigs, the people that they test this on, that they develop it on, and then they go and sell it. So
they use many kinds of weapons against us just to test it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very dangerous,
yes.
Weapons. It's illegal to use it against civilians by the
right.
International law. They use it. And it's most made in the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not just these weapons they use against the civilians in nonviolent demonstrations. They use live bullet also. And they use it against my son. They shot my son in front of me. Also, they want to break this way by putting more pressure and send bad message to us as a family or as people in Belayin and other villages, just by killing people, shooting people, attacking the house at night times, arrested children, all these kinds of violence that they use it against us. It's just to break us. They didn't want this way to be grow and people know about it.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about how they break into homes at night, how they use these terror tactics, how they arrest kids, take them out of the home, take their parents out. It's just
It's really very hard, to the night raids, especially when you have it sometimes every night.
Mm.
That's a big group of soldiers coming to the village, attacking the houses. And it's happened in my home many times. And these tactics is especially against the kids, against the children.
Yeah, that's...
And when you see 20 soldiers inside of the house, cover their faces with machine guns, with dogs inside of the house, and you have 5 children... They just wake everybody when he's sleeping, and you cannot imagine how much it's very dangerous against the children to be in this situation. 6 years old or 10 years
and
old.
And psychologically what that does.
Yeah, and it's we have many problems, lots of problems with the children now, as psychology problems because of these night raids. So this... Arrested children also is a bigger problem, and arrested children is to put a pressure on the families and in the parents to stop this resistance in Belayin. They arrested 150, most of them as children. They put them in jail between 4 months to 18 months to break the family farmers. Also, they was putting lots of money against the children in the court to pay. So these ways that they use it, these tactics, these weapons that they use it week after week and day after. Just when I was here in this tour, they raid the village 3 times at night time. They arrested 4 children, and they also on Friday they arrested another one, 2 of my cousins. So it's continued. The violence is continued until now. It's the same.
Hmm.
The building of the settlements is continue and very fast. So people should know about this, what they're doing. So if you talk about 10 years later, next 10 years, you will not find Palestine. So from 1948 until now, you have 12% from the Palestinian historic land that's left for the Palestinians, and it's like contornos. People cannot live in this life, and this is what they want to do, just to make it more hard for the people to
isolate people
to live from Palestine.
Tell us about the court victory. Tell us about your challenge of the wall in the ruling of the International court in the Supreme Court of Israel to...
It's, you know, it's when we started our resistance in Bel'in, we didn't just go by a demonstration, weekly demonstration. We're fighting by many ways. So we did our demonstrations in the ground, our resistance in the ground, and then we fight in the court, and we fight in the media, same right. ways. So the court was, in the beginning, they refused our call three times to the court to move the wall and this, but after that...
What were you challenging? You... Where the wall, I mean, you were challenging the existence of the very existence of the wall and also its placement, because the court really ruled, didn't say the wall was illegal, but it did move the wall. It did say that it was placed wrong. Is that right?
What Lahai's court said, that the wall is illegal and they have to demolish it.
And the international court said
yes.
Yes.
Yes, this is what they said, but they didn't care for an international law and they didn't follow anything. They continued to build the wall. In Bel'in, the case was, is we have our Israeli lawyers, Michael Spark, they refused our call three times in the beginning and we continue to fight in the court.
Mm-hmm.
Then after 2.5 years of our resistance in September 2007, we had a decision from the Israeli High Court to move the wall back 500 meters. So when they built the wall, they built it where is the last house in the village. And they left a big place to build more and more houses and settlements. So in our fight, we in the court, we succeed to move it 500 meters back.
Okay, so you recovered some land.
Yes, we it means we have 1,200 dunams back to the farmers in Bel'in, and also the succeed is to stop 2,000 apartment that's in the settlement Mishtiyahu Mizrahi.
So you were successful in stopping 2,000 apartments from being built.
Yeah, so it's a big succeed for a small village.
Yeah,
and
yes.
It's the first time that's happened in Palestine. So if we have this in all Palestine, these demonstrations, it will be a big succeed.
Yeah. Tell us about your brother Imad and how he began documenting with photographs the what was happening and how that became 5 broken cameras.
Yes, it's a different story. That's when my brother Ahmed, he's bought his camera or he's get his the first camera. It was to film his son that he's been born, new son, Jibril. And, you know, it started in the same time that the resistance in Bel'in. So he was filming what's going on in the village when the soldiers raid the village at night, when they came in the day, he was filming the demonstrations. And he's tried to put this in YouTube every time
YouTube.
To share the message and to do what's the...
make it public.
Yeah, he didn't think that he will make a movie someday in the beginning, but you know the movie is now very famous. It's nominated to Oscar.
Came close to getting in.
Yes,
Oscar.
And it's also very important that this movie it's get a lot of attention after nominated to Oscar, and it shows the how the people live, how under the occupation, how is. A child grow with a violent of the Israeli army. How the farmer has lost his land and he's been, they arrested him for 18 months. Or a simple man like Basim, he's a peaceful man and how they shot him. So it's example of the Palestinian's life. And people didn't know about it here or in Europe or everywhere. So when they saw the movie of the 5 broken cameras, it's very good that get a lot of people to understand the story in Palestine.
That's what we need. Because we don't get that in the Western media here. We just don't get... The big struggle is to get the Palestinian story out, to get the voice out. And our newspapers, unfortunately, just don't allow space in their pages for the Palestinian voice. They don't have it. And so when you get a breakthrough, like Five Broken Cameras, it's important. It's amazing. It's wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, tell us in the last few minutes, where are we? Things look awfully bad from this side of the ocean in terms of what's happening in the West Bank. And I just wonder, you've been in this for so long, you must have some kind of a vision for the future, where your hope is. What is your vision? What is the hope going forward?
When we're fighting for a better future for our children.
Mm-hmm.
And we have hope that our children will be in a better future, and all children. But in the ground, if you go there and if you see what's happened now in the ground, that you cannot talk about a solutions. That's what United Nations bought, like a two-state solution. Mm. They killed the two-state solution. So if you, they didn't, you know, there is no more talks about the two states.
No.
Because, you know, when you have 250 settlements inside of West Bank, when you have 700,000 settlers, when they continue to build, so it's they make it one state. But they didn't want one state or two states. They want just one Jewish state.
Right.
This is what they're calling for. But we have hope to fight for one democratic state, to have justice, equality for everybody, rights for everybody to live in freedom and peace. So this is the only solution that we have. And I said they didn't want this solution, they didn't want another solution of two states, because they killed the two states. So we have to fight to put more pressure in the Israeli government to accept the international solution.
Okay, so what we have right now is one state. We have one apartheid state. We have a state that has a set of laws for Jewish people, a set of laws for other people. So you talk about one state, democratic, everyone has equal rights. That has to be a secular state. You can't have a Jewish state and give equal rights to everyone.
Yes.
And that's the struggle, I take it. That's the struggle, is to get, they have to give that up.
Yes.
And we have to have a state, secular state, for all people, equal rights.
Yes, this is what we fight for. Justice.
Mm-hmm.
And equality. This is not coming. Will not coming from the occupation.
No.
It's have to be more pressure from outside on the occupation to follow this solution.
In terms of positive actions going on around the world, what role do you think the BDS plays in this?
BDS is very important, and it's part of the nonviolent resistance. So we call everybody to join the BDS movement, mm-hmm. boycott, divestment, and sanction, to put more pressure in this government to follow the international laws, to accept and to stop building these settlements and this wall to make the life hard for the Palestinians. So BDS is very important. BDS is succeed in many ways, like against the apartheid in South Africa. Also, it was by boycott the apartheid in South Africa, mm-hmm. from outside,
right.
of the country, and they succeed to do it. So we call everybody to join the BDS against the occupation.
And it's important, because we know that Israel is hurting by the BDS, because they're really come out so strongly against it. They're getting their supporters in the United States and the legislatures to create laws,
yeah.
making BDS illegal. I mean, so it's working, and it is perhaps the major nonviolent weapon we have now to oppose the occupation.
Yes, it works, and it works in the United States, in Europe, in England, everywhere. It works, and people start to join this. But also, we have to educate people. We have to give him more information about the situation there, so they can. You have more people will join this. Yes, but you know, you have a strong Zionist lobby here in the United States, and you have a strong media that if you do anything against the occupation, they will call you anti-Semitic or they call you a terrorist or this. They throw words to scare the people, but BDS is a part of the nonviolent resistance, and everybody have to join and to be in this part, at least because we didn't want the people to be silent.
Right.
We will not remember the words of our enemies, but we remember the words of our friends. So I think people didn't have to be silent, especially in the United States, and especially that your tax money goes to help the occupation, the army, to kill other people in the world. So they have to stand, they have to talk, at least to join this BDS movement.
Yeah, we have a lot of work here to do to support BDS and get out the Palestinian story. Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time. Iyad, thank you for sitting down with us. We've been following the plight of Bilayin. We've had people on this broadcast, actually, who have been there several times. So, and you've been here, I guess it was a year and a half ago we had you on. So we are watching this carefully, and we support you, and we hope that you'll be a frequent visitor here, because we really identify a lot with what's going on there. We identify with what's happening at Standing Rock, and it's important that all of us pull together to make a difference. So thank you very much.
Thank you. We try our best to it's very hard, but we try our best to inform more people, to educate more people. Very hard to travel, to go outside, to give talks, but this is also one of our ways in nonviolent resistance to educate more people and to get more people to understand the story.
That's important. That's right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was a conversation with Iyad Bernat, representing the Popular Committee of the Village of Bilayin in the West Bank of Palestine. And that is our program this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You will find us here at 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. You can also stream us live on your computer at WZBC.org. We thank you for your time, and we hope you will join us again next Sunday and every Sunday. You are tuned to WZBC 90.3 FM, Newton, Massachusetts, and this is John Roberts wishing you a good morning.